Men in Review.
Why was it black for so long? Is that the symbiote?
The symbiote is taking over, everybody. It's okay. It's okay. Nothing makes sense here because this is kind of funny. Sony Spider-Man Universe in Review, formerly known as the Sony Pictures Universe of Marvel Characters, aka the SPUMC. But as of August 2021, it is now Spider-Man Universe, aka the SSU, aka no one's going to fucking call it that, aka I was not going to commission Carter Harrell and Cameron Kennedy to make a Spider-Man in Review version of this. So you get the MCU intro. Pretend it's MCM. Marvel Cinematic Multiverse in Review. It is what it is. It doesn't matter because what this is a rewatch of 2018's Venom. As always, I'm Tim Geddes and I'm joined by one of the coolest dudes in video games, Greg Miller.
Hello, Tim. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Doing fantastic. Of course, we also have the big dog, Kevin.
Buenos dias, Tim.
Hello.
Kevin. Movie. This is Kevin's favorite superhero movie in Review.
Can't wait. Can't wait to hear Kevin's ever-evolving thoughts on the Venom universe.
I'm very excited when Ghostbusters, the new one, comes out, and it's just trash, and Greg's sitting there, heartbroken. We get to make fun of him again.
I'm sure when it comes around to 2016 Ghostbusters for Ghostbusters in Review, you won't talk all sorts of needless shit. You're right.
Of course, we have the producer slash producer, Dick Scarpino.
You know what I mean, Tim?
Fantastic improv.
Give
there,
me the Academy Award, I will, ladies and I gentlemen. Would. Give me the Academy Award.
And the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
Venom.
What a fucking terrible song.
It's one of the worst songs in the whole world, the whole entire world. Oh, God, I love it. Of course, we are doing this rewatch of Venom to lead into Venom, Let There Be Carnage later this week. It will be recorded and going live on Friday. So stay tuned. Get hyped for all of that. We do an review twice a week here on youtube.com/kindoffunny and roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kind of Funny in Review, and we'll be right there for you. Normally, we do different franchises two a week, every week adding to the franchise, normally leading into a new release. But we're starting a new thing now where we're also going to rewatch the movies we've previously done for some context going into the new movies. We recently did it with Iron Man 3 leading into Shang-Chi, and now we're doing it with this Venom leading into Venom, Let There Be Carnage. If you want to get the show ad-free and watch live as we record it, you can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny, just like our Patreon producers, Molecule and the Kind of Funny Destiny 2 PC clan have done. Thank you all so very, very much. Today we're brought to you by MeUndies and Quip, but we'll tell you all about that later because I do not want to hesitate. I do not want to dilly. I do not want to dally any longer. I want to talk about Venom with a runtime of 1 hour and 52 minutes. This was released on October 5th, 2018, which means this is my first time on Venom in Review because I was on vacation back then. Oh. So I missed out. I didn't get to give all my thoughts there.
Wow.
This is also the fourth Marvel movie set in San Francisco following Hulk in 2003, Ant-Man 1 and 2. And then there was this. And now we got Shang-Chi and Venom 2 coming up too. So San Francisco kind of popping off. It's also the last film to feature a Stan Lee cameo to be released during his lifetime before his death on November 12th, 2018. He filmed two more cameos that were released after his death for Captain Marvel and then Avengers Endgame to take it all home. This was directed by Ruben Fleischer, who's best known, Nick, as the director of...
You got me. I don't know.
Zombieland. Zombieland 2 Double Tap. He's also the director of, Greg?
Zombieland 2 Double Tap.
Yep. And the upcoming...
Oh, and Zombieland.
Uncharted is what I was
thinking. Oh,
Sure, it's going to be great then. Yeah.
Tom Holland, can you just talk like you got a mouthful of marbles and a mule kicked you? That's what we want right now. Do the same thing we had in the Venom movie from the one and only Tom Hardy.
The music was by Ludwig Göransson, who we all should know the name of because he is the fucking man. He is the newest god when it comes to the composing game. Am I right, Andy?
Ludwig, I don't know who that is. I don't know.
Oh, you 100% do. Creed 1 and 2, Mandalorian, Black Panther.
Never seen
Community,
Creed.
Produced Childish Gambino's last three albums, winning Grammys left and right for that shit. Yo, he's the next level shit. The Mandalorian. You love the Mandalorian theme song.
Oh, the little synthesizer. Yeah.
So he did the music for this one. A budget of $116 million and a box office of $856 million. They're going to keep making these things, everybody, whether Kevin wants it or not. Does this movie pass the Bechdel test, a measurement of representation of women in fiction, asking whether a work features at least two women who speak to each other about something other than a man? No, it does not. It does not even kind of for a second try to attempt to pass it. There are two named female characters.
I was going
to
say there's the female doctor and then woman from Dawson's Creek.
Mm-hmm.
There's three because there's also the homeless lady.
Ah,
you're right.
And the woman who runs the convenience store.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Chen.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Chen, I believe your name, everybody. This character. Guy also made the movies.
Yeah. What do you got?
No, he lost him. He's
gone. I'm not. I'm trying to go far enough back to the callback to the guy made the two movies, and I can't remember the two fucking movies from 3 seconds ago in the goddamn interview.
Mm-hmm. Anyways, does not pass the Bechdel test at all.
Unfortunate.
Nick Scarpino, I want to start with you.
Mm.
What do you think about your rewatch of Venom?
This was, sometimes you get pleasantly surprised when you rewatch a movie. You think maybe I didn't bring the right energy into the theater. Maybe I missed some of the nuance of the performances of this movie. Maybe I wasn't paying attention close enough. You know, I sometimes look on the Instagram while I'm doing stuff. I look on the news feeds, the Twitters, all that stuff. And this one I had to sit down and write the plot for. So I had to pay a little bit closer attention to. And let me tell you, Tim, this movie was somehow worse than I remember it being. It is. There are not a lot of redeemable qualities in it. Because right when it starts getting okay, we're like, okay, some of the action's pretty cool here. Venom starts talking, and you're like, is he drunk? Why is the Venom voice just like a drunk Vegas asshole the entire time? This movie is just very poorly. I think it's just very poorly
made.
I just don't think that, like, just the foundation of this, like, what are we going for here? I think they looked around the room and there was no one else in the room. They were like, cool, we'll just make this movie as soon as and fast as humanly possible. Yeah, I cannot be less excited for Venom 2. But then I'm so not excited for it that I'm almost like, wait a minute. Am I coming back around for it? Do I want to see what this train wreck is going to be like? Let's go.
Evan Coelho, what do you think?
I hate this movie. And rewatching it was so painful. The only satisfaction I got out of it was that Paula has never seen it because she missed that movie outing. So,
and now you're divorced.
No, it was one of those things where we sat together and kind of laughed and like would pause and be like, what? Like, why is the dialogue so bad or the action so stupid looking? So that was enjoyable until she fell asleep. But, I had to be like, hey, like, just before you fall asleep, I want you to know there's a moment where Venom, like, they're both really down, and Venom, like, is honest with Eddie, and he's like, in my planet, I'm a loser, too. And we had a good, hard laugh but at even, that.
The problem is, Kevin, your performance and delivery right there was more heartfelt than Venom's.
I'm a loser, too.
Oh, God.
Craig Miller.
Yeah, this movie's no good. You know what I mean? I think I remember walking out of the theater and doing a review and just really, really not liking it. I didn't enjoy it last night, but I didn't hate it as much. But because I wasn't doing the plot like Nick's forced to this time, I kind of also was on my phone a bit more. So I was like, you know what? I don't remember this being as such a train wreck. Now Nick knows my pain and I know his pain. And then we all know the pain because we watched this movie. It's like, there's like, so many things that on the page I think probably read well, but I just do not like Tom Hardy's performance.
No,
I do not like. I forget the what's the who's
Michelle
the woman?
Michelle Williams.
Michelle Williams.
Yeah,
I don't like her performance.
Wait, which part of her performance? Do you like the part where they started with New York accents and then halfway through they just don't have New York accents anymore?
Well, that happens a lot of times when you get assimilated to a culture like San Francisco.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
You just lose it in the middle of a movie. you know, like,
well, 6 months yeah, like, past, so
sometimes the action's all right, you know what I mean? But there's just so it's just a lot of stuff is happening in this movie, and not much of it's, and just Tom Hardy is not, his performance is so bad. Like, I just hate his Eddie Brock with a passion.
Andy Cortez.
Part of me was like, oh, you know what? This movie is so bad because it was made during quarantine.
Yeah.
And it's yeah. not. It wasn't. Was no. It came out way before quarantine.
Way before.
And we got linked in a tweet with a video clip of us at the end of the last time we reviewed this, where we kind of walked away going, you know what? Terrible movie. I didn't hate it, though.
Not all of us. Not all of
and
us.
And I regret those words. I regret those words. I'd like to apologize. And in fact, to get more hits on this, make the thumbnail. Andy apologizes for what he said last year or 2 years ago or whatever.
Yeah. And there it is, dummies. Finally, that's what you clicked on. You just got it. You thought it was going to be someone else. We got your view. Too bad. Get out.
This movie is fucking atrocious in so many different ways. I hate Tom Hardy's character. I thought that I might get some of that dumb fun this time around, and there was just no dumb fun to be had. I laughed a couple times at the absurdity of just what was happening, but there was never a moment of saying, wow, this moment is kind of redeemable and neat amongst a fucking barrage of just bullshit. This moment is pretty neat. No, it's just like it's all bad all the time, and I fucking have lost hope in our country that there's going to be a sequel for it. Lost hope.
Yeah, it's not good.
But this time it has Woody Harrelson for like a lot longer.
I was gonna tag Nick in a tweet of just him, his face with the that stupid ass wig on.
Oh, God, it was bad.
We already did like, you know, wigging out last episode, so we're not gonna do it here.
Why not?
Is it a wig? Oh, I don't know. Oh. Wigging out with Scarpino.
What's up, everybody? I just want to point to this scene again because I don't think I quite got the nuance of this scene when it first happened, when he walks in and Woody Harrelson's character, of course, best known from Cheers, is scraping Welcome Eddie in blood on the bars. And you're like, this guy's really crazy. And he's like, listen, man, I'm going to drop the serial killer act right now. I called you here to tell you one thing. All I've ever wanted in life is carnage. And then the scene stops. But you have to imagine in the narrative of this movie, there was a point where Eddie goes, follow-up question. What the fuck does that mean? Yeah. What is going on with this whatsoever? But anyway, yeah, he was wearing a wig. It was terrible.
Can't you see it? Can't you see it being like, he was like, it's the name of the sequel. Like, that's what the sequel's going to be called. Because, yeah. Like, that's the way the universe is built, where it's like none of
they thought it was so cool. They thought it was so
they
cool.
They thought it was going to be the most hype thing ever.
Wish in the writer's room.
Yeah. I would actually love to sit with Tom Hardy and be like, just me and you, Tom. No one's here. Were you trying to get out of the sequel? Is that what you were trying to do here? Like, were you trying to act so bad in this? Oh, I'm sure he did, but he's probably like, I want to do this quick movie, get a paycheck, and get the fuck out of here. And I'm sure there was something in his contract that was like, if you're so bad, or like maybe he was like contracted for the sequel and he's like, maybe I'll just be so bad that they won't bring me back. It'll be embarrassing. Cause this is, he's all over the place in this movie.
He didn't read the fine print and it was like, damn, it says that if I agreed to jump in a fish tank through in a restaurant that I'd be in the sequel, and I did it. I didn't fucking damn read it. The fine
I didn't
print.
Even know
damn
it. They got me.
Here
they
comes
me.
Part two.
We'll get to that later, Andy, but that was improv. He decided he wanted to do that. Tom Hardy wanted to get the lobster tank. He saw the lobster tank. He's like, I want to go in there. So then they had to make it. They had to make a custom lobster tank for him because the lobster tank couldn't fit him. So they did.
No, Tom.
No. Was he like binging drugs or something during the filming of this?
No, I don't know.
He was just getting in character, man. He had a symbiote in him.
I mean,
what are you gonna do?
But like, he's a good actor.
Should we talk about just the idea behind this movie to begin with? Because to me, the idea behind it is flawed. Like, trying to make Venom a good guy was just like, that was where we went wrong.
He's the anti-hero, though. He's not the good guy.
He's
not black and it's not white.
I'm sorry.
He's
well, we didn't get Tim's opinion, did we?
Sorry, Tim.
Oh, no, yeah. Yeah. I don't think this movie is a travesty. I don't think it's good by any means, but I definitely think that it's an entertaining watch. And I think that it is only bad in comparison to MCU movies, and the fact that we have these movies to compare to one for one on what an origin style, origin story, what action scenes, like all that type of stuff, like what that could be and what we expect from these things based on all of that. I like Tom Hardy's performance. I like the Venom voice. I think the sound design in this movie is incredible. Honestly, I think that is really, really well done. I think that they are very inconsistent with a lot of the elements that they go for, specifically the plot. I don't think I've ever seen a movie with a plot so simple that all is as convoluted as humanly possible for what really boils down to a, you go from point A to point B, there's not even other points. Yet somehow there's time jumps and there's like completely senseless decisions where it's like, you, instead of having Riot be the symbiote that came from somewhere else that had to get to them, why wasn't that one just Venom to begin with? Like, it would have just so simplified dumb. The story way so simpler. Much more. So there's also a lot of like B plot, C plot stuff that they try to have that really are just other sides to this A plot that are just unnecessary. And I think that that's the type of stuff that dilutes this from really kind of like being anything like unique to itself. And it, that is where I think the comparisons to other movies really start to come in, where it's like, there's a strong sense of A plot, B plot, C plot in superhero movies that we expect. So not getting it here, I think, is a big disservice to the film. And on top of that, I think that this movie has a lot of really cool ideas and they just kind of neuter them going in. Like, the horror stuff works for me. Seeing Tom Hardy's performance as a very unwell man with this disease in him and the way they kind of deal with it, I think is very interesting. The idea of the bad guy kind of finding these homeless people and breeding them into this horrible alien situation is so dark, but I just don't think that they go the step further they needed to. I think an R rating could have really, really, really cemented this into being a good movie if they just went more in that direction. Instead, they kind of flirted with it a lot, and we see scenes where we get the setup of Venom about to eat somebody, but then the camera cuts away from us seeing them eat him. And it's like, why even?
You just want to see them wrestle with it afterwards and go, ooh, gross, I ate somebody.
Well, and I think the biggest problem there is it's just like they set up this whole thing with Venom and Eddie and the way that they're interacting and like the choices that they set up in this movie that they all chose to, because Spider-Man's not in this. So they decided to come at this from an origin standpoint of like a new unique thing. So they're making their own rules. And yet the end of this movie makes no sense of like, why would Venom sacrifice himself for Tom Hardy? Why did he not fully die? You know, it's like, what? Like, why did he just come back at the end? It's like, oh, well, I guess if a bit survives, it's like, well, then why did they have like the weird sacrifice scene 2 seconds before we hear him like come back and be like, oh, I'm here, you know? So
I'm at the point when it comes to story beats where I hate so much of the rest of the movie that I don't expect the movie to have any logical story beats. Like, I earlier Kevin asking if Tom Hardy was on a drug binge. Well, performing Tom Hardy, Tim liked Tom Hardy's performance. I think Tim might be on the drug binge here, but I think we need to have I think we all need to get together and talk to Tim
pH
about
balance
this.
Strip and let's stick it on Tim's forehead because he's
I mean,
because
here's the thing. When it comes to defend myself, I feel like Venom has never really been much deeper of a character than this. Like,
he's always had a cool suit. A cool design.
It's a cool suit, but at the end of the day, Venom was always a loser. He was always kind of like in this weird comedic bad element. Yeah. And it's like he had this cool 90s side to him, but it's like it was more often than not that he was a joke character and it was not serious. And like it worked best when he was scary and like when he was like fucking up and kind of just messing up the human beings that they were linking to.
Like,
and I feel like
Eddie
Brock in the beginning of this movie kind of really was not crazy and on drugs until Venom got into him, and then it kind of was poisoning him as it went on. So it's like I think they did a good job with that stuff, and I think that with Anne and Dan, the other characters, I like that they subverted expectations for the most part. Towards the end, when she gets the Venom suit, it kind of ruins a lot of that. But I like that Dan wasn't this asshole bad guy that we're rooting against being the new boyfriend. It was kind of like they set it up where he was looking out for Eddie and trying to help him. And so it does set up one other lingering plot thread of like, so wait, is Venom still killing Eddie still? Because he was killing him. The doctor
said like, now that they feed him or whatever he wanted.
Yeah, when they feed
him,
he's no longer.
Gotcha.
That was the missing part.
He was doing it on purpose. He was eating Eddie, you know what I mean? But it's because he wasn't getting fed or whatever. Kevin Coelho from kindoffunny.com/kindoffunnygames.
Where do we get that Venom is a loser? Is it just the other Spider-Man movie? In comics?
Yeah. I mean, literally, any adaptation of
it. I'm with Kevin as I don't remember that. I always remember. Yeah, I mean, I remember Venom mainly from the McFarlane run where he was fucking hulking and terrifying and horrible.
Yeah, it was either hulking, terrifying, or it was like super comedic. I mean, there's lines from this movie that are straight up like the pancreas and the liver and the whatever. Like, that's straight out of the comics, and it's goofy. Like,
yeah,
it was,
but like, even I feel like in the comics, it wasn't presented that way. Like, it wasn't meant to be goofy, right?
It was.
I would love if we asked the filmmakers, like, what were your influences? And they're like, yeah, we made him goofy because of, like, Topher Grace. That guy's just a fucking goofball. Like,
you seen that 70s show? Classic.
So go ahead, Kevin.
Oh, I was just going to say, Tom Hardy, I feel like, is, like, he becomes, like, an alcoholic after the 6 month. Like, he's not in a good place and kind of a stumbling idiot right after he gets fired, or I guess the time jump happens, right?
So, well, I mean, he's just down on his luck. I don't think he's an alcoholic. I think he's just like,
he's at a bar career like prospects. 2 o'clock.
It's because he doesn't have a job. He's trying to look for, he was spiraling. I don't think he was completely out of control. And I don't think at any point he ever comes close to like being like, I don't know. I think the parasite eating him was what was causing him to act a little bit delusional and crazy. I don't think that was like any psychosis or anything like that. Andy from Kind of Funny.
I have so many issues where, before he even gets this symbiote inside of him, before Venom even takes charge, I had, much like Greg, looked down at my phone, checked Twitter for a couple of secs, and I'm looking back up, and the way he's acting in the convenience store, the way he's talking to homegirl from Parks and Rec, I forget her name.
Jenny Slate.
Yeah. When he's talking to her, part of me was like, damn, did I miss the part where he became Venom? Because he's acting fucking weird as shit right now. Like, I thought he was already Venom that whole time. And I was like, oh, he doesn't even have the symbiote in him. This is just like Tom Hardy doing a really bad performance and like overdoing everything. And also, how the fuck do you go from being this investigative journalist with the most crazy motion graphics of all time? This dude, you lose your job. You're not going to be fucking looking for a janitorial service.
Yeah, remember, like, he circles the waiter job or whatever. Like,
damn, come dude. The fuck on, dude. Like, you're like in part of this big corporation. That's true. Making my point right here. That's it. I was just so annoyed by that. Like, the fact that he's like, he loses this job where it's the fucking, what's his show called? The
Eddie Brock Report.
The Eddie Brock Report. Like, it looks so professional, and it looks like he'd be so sought after if he were to ever lose a job anywhere, and then suddenly he's looking on Craigslist for whatever. Well,
that's
like,
what's
come
so
on.
Weird about it is like, so he stupid. As a character is just not very likable to begin with, to your point. And I think that he starts off and you're like, okay, this guy's like an investigative journalist, right? And we see this montage of him breaking all these cases open where it's like, this is why bodies are buried in landfill. Yeah. Like, this is what's happening over here. Like, oh, this guy actually probably knows kind of what he's doing. And then the first time we see him in action, he just randomly torpedoes his own career, knowing fully well what's going to happen if he does this interview the way he does it. His boss is like, don't do that. And then his boss is like, hey, who's your source? And he goes, I don't have a source, but that's not true. He does have a source. He hacked his fiance's email, which is not
but
a
she
good
got caught
for
that too.
And she got fired for that.
Yeah.
And so he starts, I think the character arc for Eddie is just a little bit off, because he's supposed to start of like, I guess he's supposed to be dishonest, even though everything up until that point shouts out that like, this guy is literally like a boots on the ground, grassroots, honest to God journalist. And
he's a good reporter. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good reporter, which means he has ethics. And then he just does this totally unethical thing where he decides to open up his fiance's computer and or email.
Yeah,
that doesn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, just going back to like the idea of Venom to begin with, I just find it so much more fascinating that Venom is this sort of like this pipeline for people's like evil to come out of themselves. And I know that's not what they were going for with this. What they were going for, they were trying to make him the anti-hero. They were trying to make him this thing. But I just find it so much more fascinating that Venom is like, is that dark part of yourself that wants to tap into your inner power, and he helps you do that. And then by doing that, the parasite has a dual meaning, right? Where it's like, yeah, he's a symbiote and he's a part of you, but he's also eating that last little bit of good in you. Like that, and that's what I always found that was so fascinating when he combined with like in the cartoons or in the movies, even where he combines with Spider-Man. And all of a sudden Spider-Man's OP, but then he starts doing things that are just totally out of character for him. And we don't get any of that really in this. This is not that Venom. And it's unfortunate because I think that plot line and that is just a lot more fascinating to watch.
I agree with you 100%. And I think that's the problem with this movie and them being so dead set on doing this movie and doing it the way they did it is that, yeah, when you can't tie Eddie Brock to Peter Parker and you can't tie Venom to Spider-Man, then you get this weird thing where it is, I never know in this movie how I'm supposed to feel about Eddie Brock, because even though where he's supposed to be likable, I don't like him, but then he's supposed to be, he is like, and it's like you're back and forth on everything in this thing where it's just like, okay, like, why would I understand Venom's a cool suit and a cool thing and this cool power set or whatever, but I don't feel the desire that I'm in there with him. And yeah, Kevin, I sent you the thing Tim was talking about. Tim, I still argue, I don't know what you're talking about. Venom was supposed to be funny in the comics. This is a scary scene of him punching it, Kevin, if you can throw it up. His lungs, pancreas, wait, so many snacks. So I mean, he's coming to attack Spider-Man, Tim. He's not there and he's punching him. He's doing it. Spidey sense ain't working.
But then he did a little fart joke at the end. You can't see it as an X-Frame.
It's coming a little goofy out of his butthole.
This is, Greg, to your point, this is like when they take Joey out of Friends and try to spin off Joey and give him his own show. You know, you take Joey away from Ross and Rachel and Monica and Chandler, and I'm reading Wikipedia to get all these white people's names because I don't know anything about Friends. But you try to make it,
all right.
Try to give Joey his own show. It just ain't gonna work. It ain't gonna work.
Never watched Friends.
Nah, never cared for it. No, I was George Lopez show. It's time for the plot. Time for the plot. Nick is going to tell us the plot. That's a new spider. That's a Spider-Man thing.
That was really cool. You just came up with that yourself.
Yeah.
That was super great. Yeah, you should work in that industry. Mm-hmm. Ladies and gentlemen, Venom, Kevin's favorite movie in association with Marvel.
Love it.
They could have made that a little bit bigger. They're like, in association with Marvel. It's not Marvel. They know we're doing this, and they can't stop us.
Marvel's aware.
Kevin Feige's just got a loaded gun. He's like, one day I'm going to put a bullet through Sony Studios. Space, the final frontier. The LF-1 heads back to Earth with the specimens, and uh-oh, something goes wrong, and the LF-1 crashes in the forest of East Malaysia, which looks a lot like the forest of Northern California. Maybe we just kind of shot all those in your woods. We don't know.
Shots it.
Yeah. The cleanup team, of course, reaches the crash sites and recovers three of the four specimens, one of which has gone rogue. Riz Ahmed and Jenny Slate watch on the monitors as they triage astronaut Jameson, which is a little reference to J. Jonah Jameson's kid here, I imagine, right, Tim?
Mm-hmm.
100%. Yeah. He's credited.
Got it. And you're like, oh, that's pretty cool. And he's got the symbiote in him. Let's see, he comes to life on the ambulance.
They kill him off, right? Like, this is them killing him, right? Because
when
Riot gets out of people, he kills them.
Is that what it is?
I feel like everyone that we saw, he left dead.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, because Venom can transfer between people
leave
them alive. Yeah, so presumably maybe he was alive. I don't know. It doesn't matter.
He comes alive and eats.
He eats the ambulance driver and then transfers over to the EMT, and then the EMT limps off down the road with a patch in her hand.
Just so many transferings of people to people. And it's just like, what the fuck? Yeah. And like it all just kind of leads to the transferring to get to action scenes. And why does this movie insist on having every single action scene with these symbiotes that are dark, all in darkness? Like, there's not a single scene where you can actually see what's going on, including the one coming up here where, like, they have the little attack in the village.
It's really bad.
It's interesting, too, because when we got to the end, I totally forgot the end of this movie. I was like, I know that resume, like, the Drake character gets one of them. I didn't know which one it was. And then you're watching them fight, and you're like, you could have made him a little bluer. You could have made one bluer and one more red, because it's impossible to see what's going on in between the two.
That will be a problem in the next movie, Nick. Don't worry.
Oh, good. Thank God.
The good thing about Riot leaving the bodies, though, like, again, Riot will leave your body, you're dead, but you're healed. Your bones are, your body is healed, you know?
It's true.
Because her shin sticking out of her fucking leg. Riot leaves her body. Sure, you're dead, but a little bit more presentable in the casket.
Great looking corpse.
Great point. Great point, Eddie.
We get the Venom title screen here, and then we head over to San Francisco, California, where Eddie Brock is sleeping the morning away, and Annie wakes him up for his meeting. She's a lawyer for the Life Foundation, and then she's working on that somehow. Eddie Brock runs a vlog called the Eddie Brock Report.
I cannot think of two actors that just seem so not great on camera together. Like Eddie Brock and what's her face? Like there's no chemistry. It just feels so this is not supposed to be on camera. Well, and yet you're letting it be there.
Andy, I think, we're too far gone. We know they don't have chemistry, but we gotta let it go.
What I read was the director cast them and they didn't have chemistry at first. And then he says, which one of you can do a Daniel LaRusso accent better? And Michelle Williams was like, can Mr. Miyagi, can you give me the gabagool? And then Tom Hardy was like, oh, Mr. Miyagi, I'll take some of the provolone. Their accents in the first 20 minutes of this movie are ridiculous. To the point where I was like, there must have been short for time. There's no way they were like, let's get one more take on that with just maybe a West Coast accent. Absurd.
Terrible.
Anyway, I digress.
Fact here is Anne briefly uses she works for a law firm called Michelini and McFarlane. These are the names of the Venom creators, David Michelini and Todd McFarlane.
Let's see, he heads to MNBN, and even the name of the network, you're like, that's you know what I mean? It's like, just
finding a way to be pissed off about everything.
But like even that network, I'm like, those.
I was more pissed off that they did the whole like they go establishing shot of San Francisco. Awesome, that's my city, baby. And then they're in the apartment, and then it was more establishing shot. I'm like, no, I know we're in San Francisco. I get it. Don't show me the city again.
Although I will say one of the cool things that I do appreciate about this movie is when they cut over to the Life Foundation and they have carved.
Yeah,
that building tight. Into the side of the other side of the Golden Gate, which is super cool. I'm like, that's
they
cool.
fucking nailed us after this movie. I loved it. I think that they did one of the best jobs with Shang-Chi being the only thing that I think outdid it. But even just them walking down the street, like the graffiti is authentic SF graffiti. The music they have playing is like Bay Area shit, super hyphy plays. Motherfuckers knew what they were doing. Good for them.
Let's see. Heads over to MNBN, where his boss, guy, he's like, I got you an interview with Carlton Drake. And this is supposed to be a fluff piece. He's like, don't fuck this up. And it's like, why would you send Eddie Brock to go and do this? Why? This makes no sense. You know who Eddie Brock is.
It's like a hard-hitting reporter show over here.
Not only that, he's like, hey, man, when you were homeless, we gave you a home. Don't fuck us. And he's like, bro. Don't fuck us. Bro, I'm going to fuck you.
I don't know. He's like, this guy is bad. This guy is bad. And he's like, okay, cool. Let's see. Andy reminds him.
He is bad, and that's all he is.
Yep.
So Eddie nailed it.
Eddie and Annie head to a restaurant on the waterfront, and Eddie tells Annie he's going to do the job tomorrow. And Anne reminds him of the Daily Globe incident, which ran him out of New York. She's like, don't have another one of those incidents. He's like, I'm not going to do it. And let's see. No, I already talked enough about the accents past Nick. We don't have to keep lamenting on these accents. I have a lot of notes about that in here, Andy, but I'm going to be the better
man. It's okay.
Unlike you're the better man, Nick.
Unlike the director who should have told them to stop making these accents. Eddie reads one of Anne's, this is later that night, he reads one of Anne's confidential emails about the Life Foundation, treatment of three people who died, and he's like, oh my God, I got to stick it to this Carlton Drake person. So Greg, he does what any good reporter would do. And just ambushes him during an interview that he knows very easily his network's not going to run and will result in him getting fired instead of getting any more corroborating sources.
He asked the hard-hitting questions and hung his fiance out to dry in the process. Yes. You know what I mean? Understanding that as soon as his editor asked who his sources were, he'd be like, and then he doesn't even say, you know, off the record, unnamed, I can't tell you, but trust me, they're worthy. He's just like, I've heard things. Yeah, no shit, you're fired. Get the fuck out of here. You're not even fired for the right reasons. You're not even fired for doing the right thing. You're fired just for being a fucking moron.
It's like it's his first week on the job, and the dude's never, ever done anything like this. Like, it's the type of thing where you go do stuff, and then the boss is, like, sitting there over the side, like, no, hey, Eddie, what are you doing? No, we don't do that. Like, oh, sorry, like... Sorry, it's first week. It's okay. No, dude.
This is the thing where, like, a world needs to have characters that are believable. This is kind of like what we were saying. I don't think it's aired yet, but the Ghostbusters mayor, the 2016 thing, where it's like, you don't believe that the mayor could be mayor. You know, he's sitting there making, like, ridiculous comments that, like, no normal human being would make, let alone a mayor of a city. And that's the same thing with Eddie, where it's like, that is not how someone would be a journalist. And that he's sitting there throwing away his career and his relationship with zero to back it up. He's not putting this guy in a position where he's going to get him to say something. He's just revealing this, gets booted, and then like has to deal with the consequences.
But he deals with them. I disagree with you because it's like, it's he did make a good call, but he made the call, and then he has to face the ramifications of making that call.
But I'm saying, like, Kevin's real reporter would... Okay.
It's not like he was in dire circumstances and needed the story. His career was going very well. He's like, he's doing all these things. He would have known better. It's just not believable that he would tank his career in that fashion. Like, why? That would be one piece of evidence. You need more corroborating evidence, and then you start forming a story based on this thing. But this Eddie Brock, who we're led to believe has one of the most important boots on the ground web shows on the fucking planet, all of a sudden just randomly pulls this Bush League maneuver. It just doesn't make a lot of sense.
And first off, how'd you get all them good motion graphics? Like, who did that intro for you, for real? You look so...
That's Fiverr.
Sorry, but like this is like a real show on TV. I'm pretty sure, right? Yeah, like that's what I got the sense.
Okay. I call it a vlog just because it looks like he's doing a selfie stick.
Yeah, I thought you were calling a web show.
I got web vibes.
I thought it was a web show. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that it's like, I don't think that he's this like renowned on TV like journalist guy. I think that it's more like he might be featured on TV sometimes, but I definitely got the read that he's more of a niche reporter type, and like he's really dedicated and takes the homeless stuff personally.
Tim, he went up to the CBS building and parked right out front. The security guard was like, "Hey, you're not supposed to." And he's like, "Come on, Rick. I know about your kid. He's going to MIT.
She get to school?"
I mean, yeah, Tim might be right. I mean, maybe I'm overshadowing or overestimating how important this guy is or how well his career is going. But
maybe the boss goes, "Look, Eddie, you haven't done much in a while. We need a big breaking story, man. Like, you're not you." Or else I'm going to have to let you go, dude. Like, we're running out of funding.
But,
like, we need a big story.
But
you know, like something like
that.
Would
you know what I mean? Like that's our imagination.
That's what I'm suggesting, Kevin.
That's what he's saying. It would have been better if that had been the case.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, he would walk in and his boss has a perfectly good relationship with Eddie. He's like, "Hey, man, I got you this piece. I just want you to go interview this guy. Please don't fuck this up.
Just give me a solid. Just go talk to this dude.
Just give me a solid." And he's like, "Okay, yeah, no problem." And then Eddie decides. And I guess that kind of speaks to just the character in general. I'm not sure what I'm supposed to feel about Eddie in this, right? Because I'm getting mixed signals. He's a good guy, but he does the wrong thing. But then he also doesn't stand up to this bully in the convenience store. And then I just don't know what his character arc is supposed to be at this point in the story. I don't know what his sort of inner need is. Is he trying to redeem himself from this New York incident? Because we only get one line of dialogue, a throwaway line, where she's like, "You don't want to get run out of New York again." Is he being literally and metaphorically chased by his past, or what's going on with Eddie? Because when he starts this story, he's in a pretty good place. He's got a great fiance. They got a nice apartment. They even have a cat. Mr. Bootsies or whatever. I forget what the cat was. Mr. Belvedere.
Mr. Belvedere, yeah.
Oh, that's a great name for a cat. And then he just, for no reason, just decides that. It's like they just needed to have him tank his career, to have him go to a different emotional place.
That's the thing. Like, you get the feeling that, like, they were like, okay, he's got to lose everything before he meets Venom. And they do this thing where he tanks his career and also ruins his relationship. And it just, again, doesn't feel like it makes any sense, because it's like, what was his plan with his girlfriend? Just take the information, she wasn't
never
gonna
know.
Get caught,
or that's he gets a Pulitzer Prize, right? And it's just like,
now you have to marry me because you can't be a lawyer, you got disbarred. Good for you. Anyway, we'll move on. Carlton Drake gives a presentation on space travel, and a little kid asks a question, and then the person running the interview is like, "Shh, don't ask any questions because this billionaire is speaking right now." And then Carlton's like, "No, don't silence her. People are always going to try to silence you, but it's the people that ask questions that get ahead and really make changes in life." And then he doesn't answer her question.
I can't even think of the
movie. Someone else answer her question.
She doesn't even ask it. He just leaves.
It's hilarious.
Oh, Jesus.
Congratulations, kid. You just learned the most important lesson in life, whereas people don't care about you. He brings up, talks about the space, talks about Curie. He's like, "Listen, we've done pretty much everything we can do on this planet. Now we need to look to the stars for the cure for everything we want to do. I built my entire empire." So anyway, he does the interview with Eddie, and Eddie, of course, presses him about this pharmaceutical interests and all the allegations about building his entire empire on on dead bodies, which, of course, he read all this in one lawsuit. And the guy's like, "We're done, of course. Why would I answer that question? You're an idiot." And then he gets fired. Let's see. He brings instead of trying to sugarcoat it at all, he just straight up brings up the three names that are listed in the brief that was sent to his girl, his fiance, the night before.
This is like how when you're a kid and like you try to be like sly with something you heard 30 seconds ago, or you know what I mean, like you ask your parents about like, "Hey, what's up with that jar over there?" And then that jar is missing the next morning, and they're like, "You just asked about it." Yeah, that's trouble.
Before we get back to the plot, let me tell you about our sponsors.
This podcast is brought to you by Me Undies. Are you afraid of the glow in the dark? Well, shield your eyes because the new Me Undies Halloween just dropped dead. Get it? Because it just there's new Halloween Me Undies out. And you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm Greg Miller and I'm the king of Halloween and I love my Me Undies. Of course, they're the only underwear I wear and I'm always happy throughout the year when I get to my candy corn MeUndies. I've had those for a long time and I like them quite a bit, but now they got new Halloween prints. You don't have to do that. MeUndies are made from natural fibers sourced from beechwood trees, making their micromodal fabric soft, breathable, and dangerously cozy. Get your spooky season up and haunting with five new prints. I See You, and that's EYE, My Boo, Tricks and Treats, Lazy Bones, and Lazy Pumpkin. Available in undies, bralettes, socks, and loungewear in sizes XS through 4XL. There are a lot of options to consider, but make a decision quickly because there's somebody right behind you to get 15% off your first order and free shipping and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go to MeUndies.com/morning. That's MeUndies.com/morning. Our other sponsor of the day, why it's Quip, ladies and gentlemen. When's the last time you got rewarded for brushing your teeth? With Quip's smart electric toothbrush, good habits can earn great perks like free products, gift cards, and more. The Quip smart brush for adults and kids connects to the Quip app with Bluetooth. Track when and how well you brush, get tips and coaching to improve your habits, earn points for daily brushing, and bonus points for completing challenges like streaks. Redeem for rewards like free products, gift cards, and discounts from Quip and its partners. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm Greg Miller, and I use this toothbrush. It's very simple. I have the all-black one. It syncs up with my phone. It tells me how much, and then I get to redeem it all the time for free gift cards. And, you know, they make you brush a long time to do it, but you do get it in the end, which I appreciate. Start getting rewards for brushing your teeth today. Go to getquip.com/kindoffunny, all one word, right now to save $10 on a Quip smart electric toothbrush. That's $10 off a smart electric toothbrush at getquip.com/kindoffunny. getquip.com/kindoffunny. Quip, the good habits company.
Back of course, immediately the next day, Eddie's boss fires him for basically being a terrible journalist, and Annie gives him the ring back for breaking her trust and hacking into her email, which is super unethical and kind of makes him a bad person. So at this point, the only person that's really truly done something terrible in this movie, Eddie. Bro, I mean, Drake, you could argue, had a couple people.
We don't.
Killed,
we haven't been confirmed yet.
We haven't really seen that. We haven't seen him do any of that stuff yet. We've only seen him be like, "Oh my god, he went to go, you know, space travel. Hey, it's all free out there. You can do whatever you want. No rules in space. Pirate it's law. Technically maritime law," which we learned in The Martian. The other three symbiotes arrive at the Life Foundation, and as Riot walks through a market in Malaysia like a zombie, I like this scene a little bit. He eats a live eel, and then the proprietor of the stand's like, "Hey, don't do that. You got to pay for that." And then Riot slits its throat, and then kills a bunch of other people, and then walks, and then transfers to an old woman and walks away.
Did we do the 6 month jump yet?
Not yet. 6 months later is right now. Jenny Slate updates Drake on how the symbiotes need to bond with a viable host in order to survive in an oxygen-rich environment. And then he is like, perfect. Because if, this is an important part, then I'll get to Andy. If they can survive here, then we can survive out there. Now, I'm not a scientist, but I don't know if that logic checks out necessarily.
The symbiotic relationship.
I don't know.
That's not how symbiotes work.
If A equals B and B equals D and B equals C. I think we're missing a part in there somewhere of like, are you sure that the bodies can survive out there? Greg Miller from Kinda Funny.
There's a reason he's a billionaire and you're here talking about a fucking movie, all right?
Fair enough.
It's true.
Fair enough.
Who had another question? Andy, I did want to, I wanted to point out, I don't know if this has been brought up. I went to the restroom for the last 2 minutes, so sorry about that. In the cut of the movie that I just watched, I never once heard symbiote.
Yeah. It wasn't in it.
They changed it?
Rid of that from the trailer,
Okay. I wasn't sure what my brain was doing there. I was like, wait, did they not have that in the movie, and I just don't remember because I was very confused, Kevin.
Andy, I got really scared and was like, is it just normal to me now? Do I not hear whatever it was? Because I watched this, like, well, it must have been midnight. I have this, like, thing over my head. I'm iPad over my bed with headphones, right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, hanging over me. And I'm like, have I just, like, integrated it into myself?
For me, Kev, I was like, wait, is it really symbiote and it's symbiote that's weird? Like, did I reverse them? Like,
I had that same dialogue.
I don't know how I'm saying it now and I'm nervous.
Now I'm scared too. Now I can't tell the difference.
I don't know how I was supposed to say it. Let's see. Drake wants to begin human trials immediately, but Dr. Dora Skirth is like, I don't think that's I don't even think that's anywhere close to possible right now. Like, and this is where we start to come a little bit off the rails for me. This guy has just hundreds of people working for him.
Bad way.
And he's like, let's just bring in a bunch of people who are lower income, some people living on the streets, and we'll get them to sign these random contracts, and then we'll just kill them if we have to, or we'll put their lives at stake. And not one other person on this team, all of whom seem actually kind of well-adjusted. Nobody protests to this. There's Dr. Dora. Then there's Dr. Emerson at the end of this. It's like, what the fuck are we doing? And then Riot kills him. It's just so weird that this smart character becomes this comically evil character like that.
But it's, you know, not. Because like the answer is it's all bad writing. All of this movie is poorly written. So the characters are so thin that like, what's his thing? He's smart and he's evil. Mm-hmm. So it's just, we're constantly hit with him being like, I'm going to find the solution for all things. And also, let's kill homeless people. And it's just like, all right.
Well, I guess that works. Let's see. Eddie drinks a sorrow's away in a bar. And then someone's like, hey, you used to be Eddie Brock, right? And he's like, yeah, I used to be. And then he heads home where he buys a free paper from Maria, who is homeless. And she is living on the sidewalk, but she's stole his paper.
But look at Eddie with his heart of gold, still giving her money for it. You know,
he gives her $20 for a $5 paper that should have been free. And of course, you know, he's just giving her.
I'll give you $20 and not sing. I'll give you $20. I'm Eddie Brock. I give it 20, but I
want to see Venom 2 with Andy.
I want Andy.
Let there be Andy.
Here's what I would love to do. I would love to see Venom 2, but I would like them to prepare a special audio track so that every time Tom Hardy's supposed to speak, Andy just has the script and he has to say the lines out loud for the entire theater.
First take only.
Look, I'm saying it right now. So many of these interviews now, looking back, is when you're watching a terrible movie with friends, it becomes more fun. And last time we watched Venom, I think it was more fun because I was around you all. Mm-hmm. And this time I was fucking alone in my bedroom watching this and I hated it. And I think a lot of that had to do with it. I was like, it wasn't even dumb fun this time around. I was just kind of like mad at the situation, you know?
You probably had a similar thing that I did where it's like last night, Jen and I are talking like, all right, we're gonna finish midnight mass. I'm like, yeah, then you're gonna go to bed, I'll go downstairs, I gotta prep PS I Love You, I'll start prepping Games Daily. It's a huge day. And I literally stopped mid-sentence. She's like, what? I'm like, fuck. She's fuck. Like, what? I'm like, I have to watch Venom.
Yeah, that happens sure to me like did. Twice a month.
Yeah, sure.
Anyway,
I just want to real quick, I just want to state that I was not in that camp when I came out. I was furious at that movie.
You were furious
in the review. I was like, this movie is yes,
but,
true.
Kevin, can you show clear. The thing in assets?
God, no, I don't want to.
You okay, did not vote it last, Kevin. Just want that to be clear.
I did not,
you did not vote Venom last. Of the Spider-Man movies.
That's tough, Kev.
Wow.
I mean, I don't remember. Your word.
You didn't even vote it second to last.
What a Venom fan. What a Venom fan right here. Venom.
Look, get distracted by the sexiness.
Venom. Yeah, Kevin sent me this image a little while ago on Slack.
You are such a liar.
It made me uncomfortable, but here we go. Female Venom. Looking Peter Parker's face.
She Venom. Officially. And briefly uses the Venom symbiote to rescue Eddie. This is an homage to the comics when she briefly wore the symbiote under the name of She-Venom.
Jesus. Her back must hurt. This? Jesus Christ.
Anne.
Eddie heads into Mrs. Chen's shop and she tells him he looks like shit. And then a bad guy comes in and charges Mrs. Chen protection money while Eddie watches next to the breakfast cereal. Mrs. Chen tells him, listen, Eddie, life hurts, Eddie. It just does. And they're like, all right, well, I guess that's the message of this movie. Eddie heads home and sees his dickhead neighbor, or maybe Eddie is the dick. Again, I'm not really sure.
Another one of those extremely unbelievable characters, this neighbor. There's just so many of these smaller outside characters that have no footing in reality. And this dude is one of them. Like, just the way he acts, it's just like, annoying. Really, it's annoying to see that shit on TV. Mm-hmm.
Pure exposition. There's one reason we meet this character, and it's for him to play music loud to see that the sound affects Venom. That's the only reason that character exists.
It's interesting because you're like, if it wasn't for that, would we know that the frequency 6,000 hertz is the frequency that can hurt Venom? And the answer, Tim, is We mention it 15 other times.
15 fucking
two
times.
Two seasons yep. with the yep. MRI. Mm-hmm. We've got mm-hmm. her doing the. We've got. We would have figured it out without
747 buzzing the Transamerican pyramid yeah. for some reason. I don't know.
There's a lot of moments where they cram that down your face. Only one moment though where they tell you that fire can also kill him. He's just kind of thrown in there too.
I thought it was interesting that like when you first meet him, he's like hanging out with a girl, might be his girlfriend, might not, and he like kisses her or something. And Eddie like goes into his apartment. He's like, ugh. And it's like, well, he didn't do anything wrong. Like,
Eddie knows the guy's like gonna play his loud womanizer, rock music, and Eddie doesn't like that. Eddie
I don't like rock that, music.
Yeah, Eddie doesn't like people that disturb the peace, as we'll find out. Anyway, he goes in and he waters a design plant, and then he looks for a job and no one's hiring. So he meditates on it, but that's short lived when his dickhead neighbor decides to practice his rock guitar over at the Life Foundation.
And that's the thing. And here's the thing. Here's what I'm saying, that my brain was a bit confused at this point in time because I looked at my phone for a second and thought, does he already have the symbiote? Because the music is annoying. And he's like doing these weird reactions. It's like, oh, the venom's taken over. No, he doesn't even have it in his body yet. He's just kind of acting.
He's angry and he's trying to not punch the wall.
It's so annoying. Yes, I just hate it.
We've
so
hit
bad.
That point. Where the noise is so loud and we grab our ears and we shake our head. We've all been there.
Let's see, going back. And over the Life Foundation, Drake attempts to bond a symbiote with a tweaker named Isaac. And then he's like, that's very tweaker. Biblical. I mean, the guy's, he's
too sure, Dick.
He's like, Isaac is the true hero of that biblical story. God has abandoned us. He didn't keep his end of the bargain. And then the Isaac character's like, what the fuck are you talking about? Where are the drugs you promised me? And then they open up the canister with one of the symbiotes and it bonds to Isaac. But the bond is short lived and Isaac dies. So they bring in the next volunteer while Dr. Skirth looks on in horror. Eddie buys another paper, but this time his friend on the street is gone. He gets the feeling that he's being followed and calls out Dr. Skirth, who tells him she works for the Life Foundation. And Eddie's like, I don't want anything to do with that. I tried my hardest to take this guy down. And by that, I mean I ambushed him in a random interview and lost my entire career. I'm moving on from that. And Dr. Skirth's like, he's killing people. You were right. And Eddie's like, oh, and leaves.
he loves those vowels.
He loves them, man. Let's see. I'm done with all this saving my fellow man shit, is what he says. Eddie walks by their old place and sees their old cat, Mr. Belvedere, and then Annie pulls up with Dan, who was in Veep, and seems like kind of a cool guy in this, actually.
Dan is coolness.
Yeah, I like Dan.
He's got a lot of the vibes of the stepfather in the Ant-Man.
Yeah.
Remember how we don't hate him.
Yeah.
What's his name? Bobby Cannavale, something like that.
Yeah. Cannavale.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like Bobby Cannavale.
Gorgonzola, yeah.
Bobby Gorgonzola, Baba Gagooch.
Yeah, it's like in this sequence, it does remind me a lot of that set, that, but a little like, I don't know, your current girlfriend just went through a tough breakup like 6 months ago or whatever with this dude who's kind of waiting on your doorsteps like some sort of vagrant, and he doesn't seem like he's all there.
Remember, he just saw Mr. Belvedere. That's why
he did see Mr. Belvedere. You're right, but it's like, I don't know. He's like, all right, you talk. You all just talk. It's like, dude, this guy doesn't seem like he seems like he has an issue, and he's come to solve it with you, sir.
And he says he's a fan.
Do you think that it's a little weird. Suspicious that Dan got a key? You have to imagine 4 months into this relationship, because she must have taken 2 months off. To just
Nick,
deal
you
with
understand. The clock is ticking. All right, she wasted a lot of a lot of time with Eddie.
I mean, you're
she
not
wants
wrong.
To have
people
a life,
around though. That age, yeah.
I'm not.
Yeah.
I'm not. Yeah. I mean, the
relationships
how many people
move much faster?
I mean, Dan is a doctor, also, so he has a good.
He's nice. Again, Eddie sucks.
Pratic oath.
This is very much like all those TikToks that's going around. You know what I mean? Where like, she's on a date with Dan and she says something like, oh yeah, I'm sorry, you know, that I won't let you read my email. And he's like, no, that's totally normal. Why wouldn't that be normal?
I don't
and then she's like,
your
fuck,
email.
You're right. My last guy was a piece of shit and I was engaged to him. And thank God those 3 weeks are done now. And here I am ready to be with you, Dan. And move Dan's in and like, meet my cat.
Dan's like, I'm sorry. I don't talk like I'm being shocked constantly. And she's like, you know what? It's actually kind of nice. It's actually kind of a nice change of pace.
And this sequence further kind of moves or further makes me think that Eddie has a symbiote in him. Just the way he's acting. He's just acting like a weirdo at this point still. Anyway. And he still is symbioteless. Symbiote.
And by the way, we're about 30 minutes into this movie, and he has not become Venom yet. Eddie tells her he misses her, and she's like, "You suck. It's over." She said, "You did this, Eddie, not Carlton Drake, not the network. You." Eddie heads to the Golden Gate Bridge and looks out over at the Life Foundation, and he decides, "You know what? I'm going to take my life back in my hands. I'm going to do good. I'm going to call Dr. Skirth." So he gives her a call. She sneaks Eddie into the Foundation that night. No planning, by the way. Eddie, not a planner. He's a doer.
He's a doer.
I'd have been like, let's talk about this. And maybe, just maybe, maybe I learned from last time where I just decided to go off half cock and just jump into a situation. Maybe you could just sneak some of this information out, maybe some video footage. We can leak this to the press and we can stop it that way. But Eddie's like, no, I got to save all these people right now. So we also need a movie. She sneaks him into the Life Foundation building. And let's see. And then he's like, on the way in, she's like, let me tell you the lowdown. Again, something we could have done over coffee, but she's like, the last ship that went out found a comet that contained aliens. And he goes, what? Are you talking about aliens? E.T. phone home.
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah, we don't call them that, though. We call them symbiotes. And he's like,
yeah, what's wrong with you? You have a symbiote in you already? Why are you acting so weird?
Kind of funny. Have you encountered any strange black goo? Drake is trying to put human beings and aliens together so we can live together in space. And Eddie's like, that sounds awesome. We should help this guy. Eddie heads into the lab and takes a bunch of pictures, one of which is a dead symbiote. Now, by the way, this is the damning evidence that Eddie's trying to get. And it's just random pictures that look like they could have been staged anywhere. It's none of this really is implicating Drake at all. But it doesn't matter.
I hate the look of this whole place, and it's not just this place. I feel like a lot of the sets in this movie, there's just a sterility to them all where like everything is glossy, everything's just way too clean, and like it just feels weird where it kind of like is devoid of like any type of grounding and emotion. I get that it's science labs and shit, but it's the most generic science lab possible, so it's kind of like it just doesn't feel like it fits in the world that they have otherwise, which is a lot darker and grittier. Like the streets are appropriately dark and gritty, but all the interiors are just so glossy.
Maybe that's supposed to show like the juxtaposition between I agree with you though, Tim. It does look very like, it looks like a lot, it reminds me a lot of the, funny enough, the science labs from Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man when 100%. He's talking to, yeah, it kind of reminds me.
Looks
of
like it fits that world a lot.
Yeah.
Maybe it does.
Maybe it is. Maybe it's Maybelline. One of them's dead body that takes a picture of. Another one is the dead symbiote that happened from earlier they couldn't keep alive. And then he finds his friend Maria, and she's like, let me out of here. And she's very erratic, and she's banging on the glass. And you're like, wow, I hope she doesn't have one of those incredibly strong, incredibly glass-breaking venoms in her, because otherwise she'd be able to just bust right out of this thing, right? Spoiler, she does, because he opens the door for her, which sounds the alarm, and then she lunges at him like a damn cougar.
I hate,
and
oh my,
venom into his mouth.
Nick, I fucking hate him being, I'm gonna get you out of here. And him just like with his hand, like if this is the fucking touchpad, him just like, I don't know what I'm doing here. Like, what do you know? What is the plan, Eddie Brock? You're like, you don't know what you're hitting. It just looks so stupid.
At this point, I'm like, maybe Eddie should look for a different career path.
Like, what are you doing, man?
Because I just don't think he's a great strategic planner. We'll just put
you
it
say
that, way.
But there are a lot of cheap keypads, Kevin. If I'm lying, I'm dying. That you could just slam your hand on and they would fail. And maybe he thought they cut the corners here on this thing. And luckily that indestructible glass they have can be destructed by a fire extinguisher.
That's true. Let's see. Eddie breaks out. He gets the new Venom, right?
Venom.
Eddie breaks out in his new superpowers and runs into Muir Woods with guards chasing him, and Venom just starts pulling him around like a weird ghost puppet, and it's completely ridiculous. And then he hides up a tree away from the guards. That's how we get him out of this.
He's scared of heights.
Time went by real fast, also, because it's suddenly dawn. It is morning time.
It's really funny to think about just for a moment. Those that was the bluffs, right? There are no trees around there. There's nowhere in that area. I know that this doesn't matter for continuity in the movie, whatever. There was a bunch of trees behind it or something. But like just knowing the setup, like there are no trees for several miles around there, right?
I don't know.
I don't know.
Wow.
Doesn't matter. Anyway, he goes home and he tries to call Dr. Dora, but she's not answering. And he's very disheveled, and we know this because this is the only scene that's shot handheld, and it's very strange. He drinks water and beer, and it makes him sick, and then he eats garbage instead, and he throws that up. And then he looks into the mirror and says, "What's wrong with me?" And then he starts brushing his teeth, and Venom goes, "Eddie." And he's like,
knocks himself out cold.
And he knocks himself out cold.
Sounded like a... It sounded like Watto calling for Anakin.
Drake gets a report that the intruder stole the symbiote, and then another lab tech tells him that one of the other subjects is stabilized, and he says his body just needed time to adjust. Spoilers, it doesn't. He dies. Eddie looks through the pictures he took from the night before. Dr. Dora is not getting back to him, so he tries to make contact with Annie while the other symbiote makes her way to San Francisco via the women's bathroom of an airport. And yeah, I'll tell you what, the scariest thing, small child. Thing is this little blonde child. That looks like Children of the Corn. And I just love that, except for Greg.
She gets in. Riot gets in this small child, and then the small child travels pretty far. And like when we see her so get far. Out of the cab, it's like we see that she's kind of zombified. Like, what did that conversation look like? Getting into the Uber, or the taxi, or whatever it was. Like, especially it being a child.
Dude, like, hands down, the parents were like, "This is the best flight we've ever had." She was killed the whole time.
Yep.
She keeps talking about eating livers, but like, we'll figure it out later.
No screen on the seat. Just stared at a blank seat for 9 hours.
Dan, of course, then takes him. What do we get? Oh, sorry. I'm not going to skip over this scene, of course.
Thank you.
Eddie interrupts a lunch between Anne and Dan, and we get the most ridiculous scene ever recorded. In film, really. I put a superhero movie here, but I'm just going to actually open that up to all film history, because it ends with Eddie jumping into a lobster tank and biting the head off of a live lobster while swimming in the tank. And one person in the scene walks up to Anne and goes, "Ma'am, this is completely unacceptable." And Anne's like,
"I'm going to call the police for real now."
Yeah. And Anne's like, "You're right. I'm sorry. We got to get you out of this tank, big cat." And it's weird and it's zany.
You know, it's one of those things, though, only a true actor could nail that.
And come up with it off the top of their head for improv.
I mean, no, they came up with it when they saw the scene or the set, and they're like, "You know what? I need to prepare this." Like, that wasn't an improv moment. It was
build the tank, you said.
Yeah, it was a problem. So the restaurant scene was shot once with live lobsters and once with fake lobsters. No shit. The lobster that Tom Hardy bites into was actually candy-coated marshmallow filling with chocolate syrup. Tom Hardy came up with the idea to have Eddie Brock get in the lobster tank when they were rehearsing the scene on location. The tank was not originally built to support the person, so they had the crew make a special one. And Michelle Williams, Anne's actor, told The Hollywood Reporter that Tom Hardy was a big reason why she decided to sign on for Venom. Quote, "He's so talented and so committed. He also makes unusual choices in a moment-to-moment, scene-by-scene kind of way."
That's
what you want.
You tell PR. How pissed off when you're Michelle Williams being like, "All right, let's get this fucking stupid-ass scene over with. No. I think this tank needs to be larger. I think the tank needs to be bigger so I can fit in it." And Michelle Williams is like, God. Like,
"Everybody, we're pausing this scene for 3 days. Props, yeah. Can you make a bigger aquarium?" Got it.
Exactly. Michelle Williams is like, "Fuck, I got to come back here, dude. God damn it, bro."
Andy,
why?
Your spot. There was definitely a point 100%. where the shoe drops and you're like, "Oh, no. I just figured out what we're making." And then it's just a race to get your scenes done.
Yeah.
And try to find another project before the movie comes out.
The thing for me with this is, and I'm not saying that it's good, but I just think that this is a perfect example of the expectations thing, where it's like, we expect this world to kind of be more lighthearted and funny, so we take this stuff as funny because it feels funny, but it's actually really dark and serious. And I appreciate the way that they have Anne and Dan react to it as if they're taking it seriously, that Tom Hardy's character is fucked up and he needs help and they need to help him. Because what he's doing is not supposed to be funny. It's supposed to be a dude that needs help and is fucked up. It's just for us watching as an audience, we're like, this is funny because Tom Hardy's fucking weird and he's like,
yeah, in this lobster. I understand there's a difference between what they're going for and what ends up coming through the camera.
Absolutely.
On
and I want to clear, I'm not saying this movie's good. I'm not saying that any of these elements are good. It's just to defend it from like just being trashed. Like, I don't think this movie is on the level of a Catwoman, on the level of honestly half the X-Men movies, on the level of a lot of other relative things to this. But yeah, I think that when you look at it for what it is,
it's very close.
I think it adds up.
Let's see. Dan's like, "Okay, we got to take him to the hospital for an MRI." And of course, the MRI machine makes Venom go bonkers. So Dan pulls him out. Dr. Dora gets gets got by the Life Foundation guards.
Is her name actually Dr. Dora?
Her name's Dora Skirth. I'm calling her Dr. Dora from here on out.
Thank you.
Because Dora reminds me of Dora the Explorer, and that brings me some level of happiness. So when I do the rest of this plot, I need that happiness. Otherwise, I'm just going to...
All out, Nick.
Dawn on me that on Thursday. Thank you, Andy. Thank you. Down in the lab, Drake and the lab tech try to figure out why the latest host is dying. The symbiote, of course, is eating it and thriving while the human dies. They're like, maybe we should feed it, maybe we shouldn't. I don't know. They also, for some reason, have figured out that certain frequencies really hurt the symbiote. And you're like, cool. Okay, so that's the third time we've had reference to this. Well, not third time, so that's second time. We're going to get 15 more of those references before the end. They also, for some reason, have let's just see. And then we hear hungry, and Eddie freaks out on a cable car. And my first thought is, this guy who's been living in San Francisco for a long time is taking the cable car.
Nick, you take the cable car at least once a week. Don't lie to me.
I've taken the cable car once in the 15 years I've been
in
California. I think my brother.
Yeah, there it is.
I think we did it once because my parents were like, well, I took the cable car. And I was like, and it goes four blocks. All right,
I've never taken it.
That's because you have a car, Nick. People take the cable car.
People do it.
They know I took the cable car every day to get to school.
Or taxis. Oh, that's what they take.
No, but
human adult males who are working professionals do not take the cable car.
Nick, he's not working professionally.
He would have taken the bus.
But also, Nick, he's not working professionally.
Damn, then he would have taken the bus, which is a cheaper option than the cable car.
No, but Nick, you know what? Certain areas the
bus pass.
Clipper car, yeah. Once you get that, I'll load it up. Yeah.
Nick, you know what? There's no way that fucking car would have had missiles in it in GoldenEye and Bond, James Bond.
It's first
no
off, way. Andy, you're absolutely right. It's Skyfall. And don't even get me started on the fact that it came back in the trailers, and I'm already mounting. Actually, I'm not mounting a defense to that. That makes sense.
Because
the car was destroyed, and now they're rebuilding it, Tim. And so it makes sense to rebuild it and put all that cool gadgetry in it. Before, it was just a fucking car he won in NASA.
James Bond review. Q fixed it up.
He didn't returns next week.
He didn't give it to Q. He stored it. He stored it in a fucking storage container somewhere. At what point did Q go in there? Like, wait, was he like, I'm going to do my homie a solid for the next 6 months and fucking work on this thing in this tiny little storage container? He took his little own. He's like, this is my own jack. Don't let me forget this. Okay? Don't let me forget it. It's my jack.
I thought Nick was going to say, he stored it in a cave with a box of scraps.
That's really funny, Andy. That was a joke. Poor Greg just wants this to end.
I'm fine. I'm having a great time. I would like this movie to end. We all hated and hate watching alone.
Ann and Dan call and tell him. He's like, listen, we figured out what's wrong with you.
You agreed to do this movie.
Well, first off, we all. You have a parasite in you. Okay. So the MRI that we figured out, they figure out from blood work. How do you feel like they figured out that he has a parasite in him, Kevin?
No, they don't. They didn't. There was no science involved. The story needed them to know that there was a parasite.
Now, don't forget.
It would be funny for him to say parasite.
Exactly. Because they're like, this is going to be the best joke ever. We're going to end. This joke's so solid. We might actually end the movie on it. I have a parasite. Okay. Thanks, Mrs. Chen. Let's see. Then his neighbor fires up the old rock guitar, so Eddie bangs on his door for him to stop. And when the guy tells him to go pound sand, Eddie shows him the Venom Spider-Man face, and the guy's like, oh, okay, and then backs down. Dr. Dora comes clean and rats out Eddie and Drake to Drake, who promptly unleashes the symbiote on her for her efforts. He kills her. Eddie gets a visit from some of Drake's goons, and Venom steps in because Eddie is making them look bad because he keeps putting his arms up. He's like, what are you doing? And he's like, I'm putting my arms up. He's like, that's dumb. Don't put your arms down. You're making us look bad.
Let me ask one question here. Is the Venom symbiote psychic? Does it have super hearing? How did it know that these men were coming to his apartment?
Super hearing, I assume.
But that's still could just be a group of people coming to the neighbor's house, right? Like, how did the Venom symbiote know that these people were coming?
Well, remember the Venom, because he probably saw somebody, maybe saw or heard or knows, feels them when they were in the lab, because he's seen these people before. Because one of them is Treese, who has been in the lab before, right?
Yeah, but
I
don't think
he's the guy with
the
weird tattoos on his forehead that looks like hair, but I think it's makeup.
Yeah.
And I'm like, does that work? Did anyone else notice? Because I might do that one of these days.
I think you just noticed. So it wasn't a wig then.
Oh, no. It was definitely like when they tattoo your hairline back in, like Joey Lawrence once did.
Look, people tattoo eyebrows on themselves. I think you can tattoo a hairline back in, Nick. I think it's
should I still
fine.
Keep the widow's peak, though, just for consistency's sake?
Sure.
Go double deep, you know?
Oh, Eddie, just go like Eddie Munster in it. Just coming like there right down to the middle of my eyebrows, Tim.
Like
it'll go like this. It'll go here and then Batwing, like bat symbol. I hate Me Too, guys. let's see. Dr. Dora comes clean. Eddie gets a visit. And this scene's weird as shit. But I will say, I do like this, how this plays out. I like the action. I like how Venom like beats the shit out of these guys. I find that kind of creative. Outstanding. Now, let's bite all their heads off and pile their bodies in the corner.
Why would we do that?
Pile of bodies? Pile of heads. Is the movie you're defending, Tim? Pile of bodies? Pile of heads.
You're muted. Thank
fucking
Christ.
Look, Tim loves this movie so much. Let's not tell him.
Let's not tell him. God, you're muted, Tim. Everything you're saying is muted.
Drake's goon sends footage of the fight back to Drake, and Drake realizes that Eddie has achieved symbiosis. You can slack him. Eddie sees Venom's reflection in the window of a car, and they have a little tiff until a drone shows up, and Eddie hops on a motorcycle to get away. So Treese launches more drones, and Tom Hardy's reaction to all of this is completely comical. He's like, whoa, what's going on? Whoa, what is that? And he does one of my things that I don't necessarily... I think one of the things that I found to be a problem on second watch of this movie is that Eddie Brock doesn't necessarily do anything cool in these action scenes. It's all just Venom. And that's kind of disappointing, right? He doesn't really like... I guess the Venom power is the Venom power, and it's the symbiosis and it's the relationship. But this scene just plays out largely of Venom's just doing weird shit and then destroys all the drones. And then Eddie gets T-boned by Triste, who's like...
I hate this whole chase scene. I just think it's really lazy. Yeah. I like the beginning of it. I like in the apartment. I do think that stuff's good and fits the characters. But yeah, the chase scene is boring and uninspired.
And there's one part that I found very annoying on this rewatch that it's, I don't know, middle towards the end, maybe even, where they're on the motorcycle or whatever, and they're like, oh no! And they like go through two close things and then off a ramp as if like, oh man, we can only do this because we're a motorcycle. And then the SUV behind them just like plows through it and comes down.
That's the moment where Venom is like, we can, and he shoots his arms out and flings it over. Yeah. But yeah, the car going through is stupid.
Just do the exact same thing. Like, why was this special to you, Venom?
I hate the sort of overuse of drones as if Riz Ahmed and his company are known for like drones being kind of their thing and way to attack and like release the drones, and these drones are just dive bombing things and exploding. Like, it's so boring and uncool. This fucking scene's terrible. Well,
the problem they have with this movie is that who the fuck are you gonna get that's not a superpowered alien symbiote to fight Venom? There's just nothing. He's bulletproof. He can't be hurt, really. The only thing we know is that fire can hurt him at some point, but I mean, God forbid one of these goons bring a fucking flamethrower to this. It's just, that's going to be boring for a very, very long time. Even when we see the SWAT team where it's like, we had to figure out something. They started using flash grenades, but even those don't even hurt him that badly. And he ends up getting away fairly easily.
I think also another problem is that like he has weaknesses that people figure out. And then if you were to implement a weapon that used it, even if you had a speaker that was playing the right frequency, you'd like, it's debilitating. Like it stops him immediately and forces him to get out of the human body. So like, it's just, at least with the world they set up, like the Venom, it's just not great.
Well, I mean, it could have been great if Riz Ahmed, who mentioned, by the way, that they had, like, one of the guys told me, he's like, these guys, they don't do very well with that frequency. It's like, you think you might put a speaker on one of the drones. Anyway, we can keep going.
Just the last thing I want to say about the drones is, Andy, it goes back to me about it, everything just feeling sterile and kind of generic. It's like the drones themselves are just as bad as, like, the super white walls of these labs and shit. It's just so uninspired, and, like, it's just, it feels like the generic sci-fi and, like, even the SWAT team of, like, cool, let's give them some goons to fight without any actual... rhyme or reason.
Yeah, it really is like the I don't know, if maybe Riz Ahmed and his company were known for pushing robotics and that, like, that being his thing, but to just kind of have like release the drones, like, wait, what drones? That's what they, okay, like there's no, I don't know, there's no, not a whole lot of explanation, and it really feels like they filmed everything and then at the end realized it didn't work and said fuck it, throw in some drones, like, and have it just kind of edited in there to have it make sense. But it's really, totally uninspired and boring.
Then Venom gets T-boned, but then he turns into full Venom, and he is going to bite the head off a tree, but then I think he throws him or something, and then someone else...
No, I think he bites the head off. Not of
No, he bites the head off of someone who I thought was a cop at first, because immediately someone says, freeze, SFPD. And I was like, did he just kill a cop? But I think it's like the last bad guy. I think it was the last bad guy,
yeah.
And then Venom jumps into the bay and swings over to Alcatraz or something and tells Eddie what's going on. And he's like, my leg's not broken anymore. He's like, what the hell are you? He goes, I am Venom and you are mine. Listen carefully, Eddie. You did not find us. We found you. Is what he said.
Which,
we were waiting
again,
for you to come. Which means
Riot would have made more sense to be the Venom finding him.
Way more sense.
We found you. So what was the plan here?
We knew that you were mad about Riz Ahmed. We knew you'd come over here.
But we saw the ship. We went aboard the ship as like a red herring, right? Where we took Riot, Carnage. Presumably one of the other ones that Tim will tell me right now. Who's the third one, maybe?
Sleepy.
I don't even fucking know. Wait, what did you say, Kev?
Isn't there a Shrieker with a blue?
Shriek, yeah, that sounds right.
So we got Riot, Venom, Shriek, and Carnage, right? A couple of them died, whatever. But the whole point of this plan, what was the point of this plan? They were like, okay, we're going to put a crack team, a first strike team for America together. We're going to put Riot, who's a leader type. We got America. Shriek, we got this. And then we got Venom, who is a self-proclaimed loser. How did he make it onto this team? Why would you cast Venom?
Andy's got an answer.
I would. Oh my gosh. Let's re-edit this. Let's find a way to refilm this. But at the very, very end, when he's like, hey, Eddie, you know what? You know when I told you that I found you? Like, I didn't. It's just,
we found each other.
I'm a loser. I am a loser. I just said something to try to sound cool, but I'm so stupid. I would have loved that.
Anyway, the whole point of it is this. We're going to invade Earth. This is a first strike. And I guess they knew we had other rockets that they could then take over and bring more other people here. I'm not sure why a bunch of them just didn't jump on this thing, but I guess they can't live in oxygen. I don't know what their plan is here. It's not very well thought out, because they die in oxygen, and it's very hard to find a host. Very hard to find a biohost.
But I don't think it's as hard to find a host. I think that they can host with someone. Transplant. They just have to eat people.
They can find like the perfect person to hang out with if they want to go longer than that.
They say, he's like, we found you. We need Carlton's rocket. I know everything about you. You're a loser, Eddie. You gonna eat anyone else? He goes, most likely. That is why we're here. Cooperate and you might survive. That is the deal. Riot arrives in SF in the form of that creepy blonde girl. I called him Other Venom because I didn't know who it was.
Thank you.
And he gets a call from Dan. Eddie's labs are worse than he thought. The host from Dr. Dora died, so Eddie is Drake's last hope, it turns out. They can't kill him until they find another suitable host. So that puts the ticking clock on them. Venom asks Eddie about Anne. He's like, she seems pretty cool. Eddie tries to give his old boss the pics from the Life Foundation, but the security guard friend stops him. He goes, you want up? Why didn't you just say so? And then Venom just runs up the side of the building and pops into his boss's office. Love the use of the it's the Transamerica building, right, that they're in this one?
Yeah.
Yeah, love the use of that. Then a plane flies overhead, and Venom freaks out, leaving Eddie to fall to his death. Only I got us. He's like, I got us. Don't worry about it. And he's like, all right, cool. Eddie leaves the pics for his boss on his phone, which, would you unlock that thing? I don't know. Maybe just email him to him. I don't know. That's a possibility, too.
So easy.
Like, you figure maybe you have I have Greg's number. Finally, after 7 years, I could just text him these pictures and be like, look what I found when I broke into this thing. And again, another one of those instances where you're like, so you broke into someone's laboratory and you stole some pictures. You know, I can't print that, right? Like, you did not achieve those legally.
He blows out all the top windows and then puts a note in a phone as if the next person in that room is going to be his boss. Yeah, you know what I mean? Not clearly the police, not even in the SWAT formation, just anybody to be like, what the fuck just happened at the top of the Transamerica pyramid?
Wow. Greg, you know about journalism. If I acquire photos illegally and then I just anonymously give that to you, can you print that?
Do I know that they're illegal when you give them to me that way?
No. I haven't said anything.
They're newsworthy, mm-hmm. obviously. I am very rusty on my journalism. I did take a journalism law course, but if I didn't know they were obtained illegally and that's not specifically spelled out to me, I think they'd probably end up printing them, right? And then it would be
play ignorance, you know?
Exactly, yeah. But I honestly do not know the specifics anymore. I get back to you. I think my...
What if I get secret CIA documents and then I give those to you?
Well, now you're that might be covered under stuff. Whistleblower. Like government law. Secret stuff, you would know.
Whistleblower,
you know what I
mean? Thank you.
That might be whistleblower law, but you might also go to jail because again, you broke in and bit a bunch of people's heads off. Eddie wants to go down to
that's
in the
big
elevator.
Part.
And Venom's
that's
like,
a big part.
Venom's like, you should jump off the thing, and Eddie's like, nope. And so they go down, and Venom calls him a pussy.
I hate seeing Nick's face and like just knowing that like, oh, he thought that was really funny and now he's trying to see if we think it's funny.
No, hold on. Is this not Venom? Like, is this not the character of Venom? He would say that. This is not out of character at all. This is what this character is.
I only know Venom from the Spider-Man cartoon show growing up. And I don't remember it being
they
like
this.
They
didn't say pussy on the Fox Kids. I'm
with Kevin on this. My only
But he was always a bully.
Spider-Man cartoon, he was super scary in that. And like, and then the Sam Raimi movie. So I didn't read any of them.
But Kevin, anyway. I also think you're off base. Like Nick isn't saying that because he thinks it's funny. He's saying that line smiling because he knows that you're going to be mad about it.
I'm saying that line because Venom called Tom Hardy a pussy. In the movie Venom. There you go. The Elements of Journalism by Bill Kovac and Tom Rosenthal. Rosenthal. Daniel Steele. Let us know what you find out, Greg.
Yeah.
They go downstairs and they see a SWAT team, and the SWAT team's like, we're going to pop smoke, mask, copy. And Venom's like, mask, copy, and forms into the Venom and just beats the hell out of this whole team. They try to flash grenade in, but it's to no avail. Then he bounces off the Raptors, and then he beats shit out of the last guy. And I think this looks a lot like the interior from one of the Rush Hour movies, but I can't quite put my finger on what it was. Then he tries to eat one of the cops, and Eddie stops him, and he sees the whole thing go down, and Eddie begs for her help. He's like, she goes, hospital, right now. And he goes, okay. She wants to go to do another MRI, but Venom's like, no, you can't do an MRI, because just in case you don't know, 6,000 hertz is deadly to me. Literally fucking anyone can cook, guys. So is fire, by the way, and ice cream. Ice cream is deadly to me, too. Greg Miller, kind of funny.
I am Googling around to make sure I'm correct on this. It's looking pretty good right now, all right? So I'm over here at splc.org. I don't know what that is. As the second issue, it is generally legal for journalists to publish material that their sources have obtained illegally, as long as the journalists themselves did not break the law.
There you go.
Journalists themselves did not break the law. Got it. Okay. What about the journalist that you hired to go and do the thing or used to work for you?
Used to, but he's no longer a journalist for you.
Okay.
Now he's just a vagrant.
What if someone kills somebody and gives you the money for the person they killed and you're like, hey, I didn't break the law. I just have the dead person's money. Pretty illegal still, right?
Yeah, Kevin and I are starting to get into
this. I think that that might be legal in the sense that, like, if you don't know where the money came from, you're just receiving a gift of unknown origin.
Tim, anyone can cook. Venom tells Eddie to apologize to her because he feels sad and might not get another chance to do so because they're probably being hunted down and killed. And then a drone starts following them. Drake gets a visit from the Children of the Corn, and the bad symbiote takes control of him, and he becomes Riot. Dan tells Eddie that Venom eating him from the inside out because he's hungry. So he attacks Dan, and Annie uses the MRI machine to detach them and trap Venom in the MRI room, not realizing, of course, that there's some massive air vents right above him that he can easily sleep out of. The symbiote escapes through those when no one's looking. Uh-oh, SpaghettiO. Then it bonds.
It's so that vibe. I'm just like, oops.
Oopsie-doopsies. And then it bonds with that lady's dog from Act 1, and I can't wait to see the hijinks they get up to next. Eddie gets a sleep dart to the chest, and they take him over to Drake's while the dog tells Annie what's up by just looking at her. And she's like, all right, I guess that's where the symbiote is now. To be fair, it flashes its little symbiote eyes. But I would also probably, this is the most believable part of this movie, because Anne, not a dumb character, right? She's like, as an established lawyer, had the smarts to leave Eddie's dumb ass in the fucking lurch, and then looks over and sees a dog just staring at her.
She knows.
Unattended. And she's like, no. This is a leap of logic. It's okay. I'm going to take this dog. And it's hilarious. Her holding the dog is the funniest fucking thing ever. Drake interviews Eddie and immediately realizes the symbiote is gone. Eddie calls him insane, and he tells Eddie, that hurts. Long journal entry about that tonight. And I laugh. Drake turns into Riot, but Eddie can't help him. He has no idea where Venom went, so he leaves him to mess with trees. There are millions more where they came from, but they got to get Venom back first. Trees marches Eddie out into the forest to kill him, but Annie shows up in the Venom suit and bites his head off. And then they just
all of this out
and transfer the symbiote back to Eddie so he can fight Riot.
All this sequence reminds me of so many of the sequences in Twilight where it's like, no, pretend this is nighttime. Like, I know we're filming this at 2:30, 4 p.m., but pretend this is nighttime. We're going to put, like, the craziest, darkest filter. We really want you to think that this is nighttime, but this is the brightest fucking forest I've ever seen in my life, dude. They couldn't do enough to make it dark, you know?
Oh, no. spoilers. Do you remember the end of Twilight when the vampire with the cleric, like the powers to show people like different futures and outcomes, like puts it all in all the bad guys' brains? Like, hey, if we fight, we're going to destroy each other. And the bad guys, for the first time in this series that I've ever seen, I don't think I've seen one since, go, you know what? We're going to make the right choice. And everyone just becomes friends. And
it's that was the fucking best. Best scene actually, I've ever seen in a theater.
Actually, a really good ending. What?
I don't think they become friends. I think they just don't.
Yeah,
brawl.
They definitely. You know they mean? Brawl later, I would imagine.
Are you gonna fucking tell me? You're gonna fucking tell me that you're a vampire in the Twilight universe after this, and you're at a Starbucks, and a werewolf comes in, and you've got a seat. You're not gonna offer that person a seat after this
come
amazing
on, John.
No, the bad vampires that show up at the end of Twilight, and like one of them's from Frost Nixon, and he gets the vision. He understands they're gonna. It'll just be mutual.
Lob his head off.
But he's not like, we're now chill werewolf guys and does this. The bad guys bounce, and then the whole fucking Edward Cullen family, they're chill. They're chill with the werewolf. First that's off, his chill name group.
I believe his name is Michael Sheen, and he played Tony Blair in The Queen. And I love him.
I'm sorry I'm bringing this conversation.
Also married to Kate Beckinsale for a while, right?
Yeah. Was he really? Good for
if
him.
Not still.
Andy, you also didn't watch Twilight, right?
No, Kevin.
And also, the Twilight vampire that puts the ideas and stuff in their head remembers Ashley Green.
You know what I mean?
Remember Taylor Swift wrote that song about her, all right?
I thought it is Ashley Green. For some reason, I thought it was what's it? Wasn't one of the sisters in it? The childhood actor that was in that one movie.
Olsen?
No, the one. Dakota Fanning. Dakota Fanning's in it too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, she's one of the bad vampires. Yeah, she's one of the ones who shows up and is like super tortured.
She's not going to Starbucks.
Tim, clear your brain right now. Which would you rather have happen? A, we watch the Twilight series again. B, we watch Hunger Games series. C, I just get back to the plot.
I'm with Twilight, baby.
And Amy Twilight in review. They sparkle when it's sunny. Dr. Emerson.
Hello, Chico. Where you back?
Venom tells Eddie that he's a loser, too. He's like, listen, Eddie, I'm a loser, too. And guess what? You remember 5 minutes ago when I was like, we're going to invade your Earth, and I was dead set on that? I've changed my mind. There's actually some pretty cool things about this planet that I really like. And you have changed my mind. Maybe we should stick together because losers got to stick together. We're going to go stop Riot. And then... Reza Med, Dr. Drake is like, hey, let's launch this rocket. And Dr. Emerson's like, we gotta have a pilot for this thing. And then Drake's like, I'll pilot it. And he gives a look like this.
What?
Do you remember that look?
Yeah. Dude, like this is the thing, like the plot of this movie, like I know we just spent fucking 2 hours doing it, but like you can sum it up so quickly because nothing happens in this fucking film. And like, there's like, yeah, then there's a rocket.
A rocket that launches off the coast of San Francisco. It's off the coast. It's like by Stinson Beach. I'm like, I don't know a lot about the law and I don't know a lot about science. But Kevin, are you allowed to have a rocket site, an interdimensional, no, not interdimensional, but a rocket that goes to space? Can that launch that close to a major metropolitan city?
I mean, Cape Cod, like, isn't...
Cape Cod pretty close?
I don't know how close it is, it's in an actual area, right? I think you can. I think you can. I think you got a lot of permission.
Are you Cape Canaveral?
Cape Cod?
Yeah, you're right.
Cape Cod. They're fucking
Cape Cod.
They're catching
fishing.
Lobsters.
Yeah, good for me. Good for lobster.
Kennedys are killing people.
Right.
They're not watching
Canaveral. Right.
Kevin, I was on your side. Until Greg mentioned it, I was like, we're perfectly aligned right now.
You know what I mean? Like, that's
you're like
my
little symbiote.
Going back to your question.
The main thing is, Nick, to think about it, remember, of course, is that you're living in a universe where there's this super smart scientist-y guy. He's perfected space travel. You know what I mean?
Of course.
Like there's less of thrust and shit and ozone when he does it. He's got it fixed.
A lot of fires.
Comics. Remember comics? It's comics.
Makes sense. Again, a silly question. I didn't actually care that it was right there. I actually thought it was kind of cool. Eddie makes, he's like, I changed my mind. Dr. Emerson's like, we got to scrub this launch. And Riot's like, nah. Instead, I'm going to turn my hands into axe and fucking cut your head off. And then I'm going to kill everyone in this fucking room.
It's right? The third act. We got to fight.
Okay. I'm going to kill everyone. Eddie sees Riot and asks Venom, he's like, can you take that guy? And Venom says, he's got shit you've never seen before. And Eddie's like, technically, before yesterday, I have never seen any of this shit before. So there is that. Then Venom and Riot fight. And it's a little bit of a hodgepodge of everything. I'm a little entertained. I'm also very confused because I can't tell who's who. And then
just
at one point,
together.
The filmmaker is like, you know, it'd be awesome if they all just became one thing. And it's indiscernible between
little tiny heads.
And the heads come out. Of course, at this point, they have left Anne back in the forest, but she catches up to Mission Control. He's like, hey, she's pretty good at dealing with bad things. And Venom's like, yeah, but she's going to get eaten alive by Riot. So I'll leave her back there. But she's like, I'm going to help you guys out. And over the loudspeaker, what do we get? Finally, The payoff everyone has been wanting from this 6,000 hertz over the loudspeaker. How she figured out how to do this, beyond me. But I guess it worked out pretty okay. Drake and Eddie fight in their human states, and Eddie Superman punches him off the launch pad, but Riot catches him and then stabs Eddie through the heart, leaving a little bit of him behind just to let him know. You know what they say, Kev? They always say, if you're going to stab someone in the leg, twist it, leave it in there. Leaves the artery open. Face off. Face.
That's where that's from. That is from Face. Nick, it was either Face Off or Con Air.
Same movie. Great, great.
Film. Very close. Great,
great films. Great films.
Let's see. Annie Wise. It is. But Venom finds him and rebonds with him, so he can save Eddie. Yep. And that immediately happens. Eddie comes back to life. He's like, oh, great. No need for suspense here, guys. We know Eddie's not dying because we've already seen the trailer for Venom 2. Venom grabs Riot's little javelin and uses it to rip a hole in the rocket as it takes off. And he's like, oh, no, you were the fucking loser. He's like, well, now who's the fucking loser, Riot? Ha, ha, ha. And then the thing explodes and Riot does a little canopy, but like a little parachute, and he protects Eddie. But the flames, Tim, the flames from the side of my head, they 6,000
hertz and fire.
6,000 hertz and fire and ice cream. Don't forget ice cream. I put that one in there. Just hoping one day he gets hit by a drumstick and he's like, oh, no. Oh,
no. I didn't know it was that too.
Vanilla ice cream. It was my favorite. Let's see. Eddie and Venom fall to the ground. Venom sacrifices himself to save Eddie and burns up in the process. Then we cut over to somewhere close to the financial district, and Annie and Eddie are having a cup of coffee together. Anne has decided to join the district attorney's office, and Eddie's going to go back to the written word, and he's got a very big interview lined up for his first print article. Who is it with? Someone we probably set up in the first or second act. Nah, it's just Woody Harrelson. Eddie wants to talk.
Good old Woody.
Yeah. Eddie wants to talk about that kiss, and Anne tells him that it felt great, right? And he's like, it did. She goes, no, I mean the power of having the Venom suit. And Eddie's like, and then Eddie goes, we're not going to tell Dan about this, right? And then Venom goes, no, she has no idea we're back together, or we're going to get her back, right? And then we're like, oh, my God, Venom's alive. That's so exciting. He's not dead after all. And then you're like, how's he going to keep that secret? Because eventually someone's going to be like this. That shit's still around. And she's going to like, you lied to me again? Then we see Stan Lee. And he says, don't give up on her, either of you. And I miss Stan Lee. And then Eddie tells Venom they have to have ground rules if he's going to stick around. He can only eat bad people. And Venom is starting to get hungry, and Eddie knows just the place. So they head over to Mrs. Chen's market for some tater tots and chocolate. And a gangster from earlier comes in for protection money again. And at first, Venom's like, I'm just going to threaten him. Don't worry about it. I'm just going to threaten him. He goes, what the hell are you? He goes, we are Venom. But on second thought, and then Venom eats the bad guy right in front of Mrs. Chen, who apparently
right in front of us.
Has seen some shit in her life. Because she doesn't really get fazed by this. She just says, Eddie, what was that? And Eddie says, oh, I have a parasite.
Case and of the Mondays,
Venom.
But wait, we have to go over to San Quentin where we get that amazingly bang up scene where he says, welcome Eddie and his blood cell. And it's Woody from Cheers. And when we get, he goes, when I get out of here, I will, there's going to be carnage. And it's like, how did
he just looks at the camera?
Yeah. And then, but it makes sense though, because he was in the two other movies that Greg couldn't remember now. They're kind of Zombieland. And,
thank you. Those are the ones.
Yeah. Oh, and then we get, if you scroll, stay to the very end, we get a cool little snippet from Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. And I'm like, oh, I should go back and watch that movie.
Because you can't forget, Nick, that this, of course, is Sony Spider-Man Universe, formerly known as the Sony Pictures Universe of Marvel characters. So any chance they get, they got to promote and they got to do it all.
Get that money.
Andy, can you hit me with that haiku and review, please?
Seven syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku in review. Haiku in review.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your reviews in haiku form. Andrew Feisner says, Annie moves on quick. Oh, look, Dan's not a dick. Eddie is just sick. Hungry symbiote. Or wait. Is it symbiote? I've heard it both ways. Mike L. in the chat says, don't want a king shame, but this film makes me lose faith in humanity. And Grant Burton says, he eats lobster. He's a bit of a monster. But where's the spider? Where is the spider? It's an excellent question. Maybe we'll see them one day together. Maybe not. Either way, who really cares? Ragu Bagu time.
Do-do-do-do-do-do.
Ragu.
Ragu. Do-do-do-do-do-do. Bagu.
Bagu.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys, the podcast within a podcast where we rank all the Spider-Man villains of the Spider-Man in review universe. That's about right. That's what we call it, right?
We're not re-ranking, though.
Yeah, we don't re-rank it. So you just read it to us, right?
And then just see if we still stand by it.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Stalling for time.
Stalling for time as he looks through the many volumes of the storied Ragu Bagu universe. Remember,
there it is. Sorry, I'm here. Hold on. That's that guy. That's that show. That's this thing. That's that Nick. God. And then we put him. Where did we put him? Where are the Spider-Man? Where are the Spider-Man?
Put him. Just not do this part.
Do we put him into another list? Oh, here it is. Oh, sorry. This was Ragu Bagu Volume 2. currently, the Ragu Bagu list at Volume 2 is number 1, Kingpin Eat Al. Number 2, Doc Con. Number 3, Lizzie. Number 4, Norman Gosborn. Number 5, Electro / Gonby. Number 6, Evil Elon Musk / Riot. And number 7, Venom / New Goblin / Sandman. So that means that before we had ranked the Evil Elon Musk and Riot symbiote at number 6 on the Spider-Man Ragu Bagu list.
I buy it just because 3 was such a mess with so many villains and none of them were interesting. I guess Sandman was like kind of endearing in certain ways, but yeah, I'll fuck with that placement. Definitely not as good as the other ones named. Anyone else have thoughts?
I didn't hear it, but I'm with Tim on this.
Thank you. It really takes a strong man to go out on the cliff there and just do that, you know?
And then for the rankings, we ranked them as follows. Number 1, The Amazing Spider-Man 2. Number 2, The Amazing Spider-Man. Number 3, Spider-Man 2. Number 4, Venom. Number 5, Spider-Man. And number 6, Spider-Man 3. This is undeniably our most contentious list of all time. And the internet hates us for it. I fucking love it.
Venom should definitely go below those. We fucked up, man.
When you say below those, you think it goes below Spider-Man, Spider-Man 3?
I think below Spider-Man 1, not necessarily 3.
I could see it going below 3, and I would be shocked if I didn't make that argument back when we watched it originally. I know earlier today you guys gave me shit saying that I ranked it higher. No, you guys fucking ranked it higher. This movie's dog water. Spider-Man 3 is also really bad. But I mean,
I was the only one ever saying liking the Raimi movies, not Spider-Man 3, terrible movie. So I assure you I always voted this above Spider-Man original.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Greg...
No, below. Sorry.
From watching it, Greg was better than this. Greg was fighting for all the Raimi movies. Kevin, if I remember correctly, you were even saying it was better than Amazing Spider-Man 1, and you were just like, I'm not ranking it this high because you were so mad at it.
Well, I mean, the real thing is those movies are so bad. Like, these movies are bad.
I'm interested in rewatching some of those and seeing how I feel about it in more modern times with different lenses of what those movies are and can be. Because, yeah, Venom is rough as a movie that is contemporary to the MCU things around it, both shows and movies and otherwise.
Look, I'm big enough to admit that I was wrong, okay? What do you want viewers,
honestly,
listeners?
So
what do you want?
This is what we want. This is some of us feel vindicated right now. This is a good moment for some of us. I'm not going to say names, but some of us feel like righteous.
Why was Finding Dory so high? Jesus Christ.
Wally could have been number 1. I can't wait for these guys to grow up, rewatch Wally, and be like, we were wrong.
Greg, you're going to fucking tell me right now that a vampire goes out in broad daylight and he sparkles.
You're going to make me laugh too. Stop.
Dude, it was a nice twist on it. You know what I mean? It was a nice twist on what we assume for vampires, right? Not only did they also go to high school forever.
I'm changing my vote then. I think I'd rather be a vampire than a werewolf.
Let us know in the comments below if you would rather be a vampire or a werewolf and what you thought about Venom 2018 and how excited you are or are not for Venom Let There Be Carnage. Like I said, we will be doing the interview for that movie later this week on Friday. I personally don't think that there's a chance that it's worse than this one. What do you guys think?
I think it'll be worse than this one.
Really?
I think it'll be better.
It'll inspire confidence in me of it being better than this.
Yeah.
I think it'll be better. Yes. I think we will put it over a couple of the Andrew Garfield movies. That's how confident I am going into this.
Wow.
Andy, maybe we should get that list together.
Andy, number 1 and 2.
It's a different time. It was pre-COVID.
COVID changed everything.
You fucked Raimi over.
Pure goddamn chaos. Until next time.
Thanks for swinging by.
Bye.